Your presence tonight. Look forward to our study together. There's some passage of the Bible that will be taken out of context, and the effect of that is millennia long. They just keep on going and going and going with that particular false doctrine. We know, for example, the doctrine of Calvinism about salvation by faith alone. We take a passage out of context, and even today we see the effects of that, as people still believe the error of once they are rather saved by faith alone. Another, of course, is the doctrine of once saved, always saved, and that's been around for so many years, it's amazing that this has never been really conquered by Bible study. Tonight I want to look at passages like that. We're finding Matthew 24 and 25. This is somewhat of a visualization of the temple in Jerusalem at the time of Herod. Herod enlarged the particular plaza on which the temple resided and remodeled the temple. And as you know, the apostles came to Jesus and was talking about the fact that marvelous temple, look at these stones and look how beautiful it is. And he said, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. Try to visualize as you can the destruction of that temple. I don't know whether they used sledgehammers or just what they used, but they literally destroyed so that not one stone was left upon another. I've read in secular history about that as they burned the city, the gold literally melted and ran between the stones. And so they tore it down stone by stone to be sure they had all the loot they could get, particularly the gold. And then, of course, the other houses throughout the same way. And it's an interesting study when you begin to look at this, because it implies also that we are going to have some interest in the answer to these questions. In Luke 21, in Mark 13, in Matthew 24, you have parallel readings about the destruction of Jerusalem. Luke 21, when therefore will these things be? What shall be the sign? And then in Mark 13, when shall these things be? What shall be the sign when these things are all about to be accomplished? Matthew 24, what shall be the sign of thy coming and the end of the world or the age? And you've got two questions here that sometimes people don't realize. They try to make chapter 24 and 25 all refer to the destruction of Jerusalem, and it does not. But because they have taken that and misapplied Matthew 25, what they're saying is that there are going to be things that are going to happen at the end of the world that should have happened at the destruction of Jerusalem. So it does get sort of confusing. What you see in the picture would be the Valley of Kidron on the east side of the city of Jerusalem below the walls. And that's where many of the things we read about in the Bible took place. But when is the question? When are these things going to be? When will these things happen? What will be the signs? Well, when, he said, don't be led astray. The end is not yet, and I'm just going to refer to these passages because, again, there are three separate accounts of this. Some of them do not offer, for example, Mark does not offer all the work or news that you find in Matthew. And I usually go by the chapter in Matthew 24. But Jesus was beginning to tell them, this is just the beginning of travail. What he was saying was that the end of Jerusalem is very near. You've turned away from God. In fact, in Matthew 23, if you want to read many of the reasons why Jerusalem was destroyed, Jesus spoke plainly and abruptly about the scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, and they were vipers. He called them out as to the guard of their many, many sins, and that they were going to be punished for this. And not only was this something that the New Testament talks about, but also you find it back in the book of Daniel that we'll notice in just a little while. And so you have the beginning of travail. And then he said, what's going to be during the travail? Many are going to be delivered up. They're going to be killed and hated. There'll be false prophets, and iniquity would be multiplied. Well, it was being multiplied even at that time. And the love of many would wax cold. So these things were concurrent with the life of Jesus, and they were to take place after Jesus went to heaven in the ascension. attention. But you have this about the destruction of Jerusalem, which is bad enough, but many people want to take chapter 25 and make that also apply, and it doesn't do that. But Jesus had the hope then that he said in Matthew 24, verse 13, "He that endured to the end shall be saved." So God was going to take care of the Christians in that particular dispensation. In fact, there were signs when this was going to take place, and he was telling his people that these signs are going to take place, and when you see them, I want you to understand that the destruction is about to happen. Run away. Get out of the town, because you don't want to be a part of this destruction. God's wrath was being poured out on Jerusalem during this period of time, and he was going to let them have signs. After that, then shall come the end. And he's talking about the end of the Israelite nation. He's talking about the end of Jerusalem. And that beautiful temple that you saw was going to be totally destroyed. And of course it was. Now in the 500s, at that same place where the temple stood, the Islam people built a mosque, and it's still there today on the very place where that temple stood. And so you can see it's interesting to look at the history of that particular spot. In the book of Genesis, when it's talking about Abraham offered Isaac on Mount Moriah. Well, Mount Moriah was the same place where the temple was built later by Solomon, and then it was rebuilt by the people coming back from captivity. Then Herod enlarged it to something like what you see in that picture, and it was all destroyed. So the great tragedy of the Jewish people was that they didn't learn their lesson. They didn't turn back to God. And we're reading in the Psalms, even now, we read tonight about their testing God and causing the wrath of God during the wilderness wandering when he brought them out of Egypt with those mighty signs, and they forgot that. And they did not love God the way they should have, but they turned again and again to idols. So now, the final time, God has said, "I've had enough." Just like it did in Jeremiah's day. Jeremiah was told to tell them the end was coming. You've lived a sinful life, and Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Well, that's the same thing now that Jesus is saying. That God's patience is worn out, and he's sent you prophets, and you've killed them, and now he sent the Son, and you killed him, and now the wrath of God is coming upon Jerusalem one more time. Well, he's saying then, what end? What end are we talking about? Then shall come the end. The temple was going to be demolished, Israel punished severely by what was called, in by Jesus' terminology, the abomination of desolation. And we'll look at that in just a minute. He said, "When you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, flee to the mountains." Let's go to Daniel chapter 9. And you have here sort of a calendar of events that's taking place. We won't read all of that. But I want to start with verse 24 of Daniel 9. And he's talking about 70 weeks. And these, again, is a figurative time. It's a period of time that was going to embrace from the return from captivity to the destruction of Jerusalem. He said, 70 weeks are determined for your people and for our holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and anoint the most holy. So you see, clearly here was the coming of Christ in Daniel 9. He was coming to do all these things. And when Jesus died on the cross and shed his blood, he finished transgression, made an end of sins, and he made reconciliation for iniquity. Then verse 25, "Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublesome times." So he's talking about the return from captivity. "After the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off." That gives you some dates to be sure that you're understanding this. We know when Jesus was crucified and he was cut off. But not for himself. "And the people of the prince who is to come shall restore the city and the sanctuary Aaron. He's talking about the Roman king there. At the end of it shall be with the flood till the end of the war. Desolations are determined. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. That's the destruction of the temple. And on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate. So verse 27 uses the expression abomination of desolation. And Daniel was talking about the Roman army when it would come. And here's a sign of what's going to be taking place. Now, there would be many who didn't understand Daniel, and so it only applied to the people who were Bible students and faithful ones who understood that this was inspired prophecy. And as Jesus talked about that in Daniel 9, he was giving them a sign. All these things are going to happen, and you need to be prepared. When it happens, when you see this army coming against Jerusalem, if you're on the housetop, do not go down to take your things. Get out. Just be prepared to go, because it's going to be too late if you worry about your possessions. If you're in the fields, and I didn't correctly do that, do not return to take your clothes. The idea was have fear and swift and get away. It's hard enough to save yourself, but woe to those who are pregnant and nursing mothers, because they will have the baby to tend to as well as themselves. Pray that your flight not have to be in winter or on a Sabbath day. And of course, on a winter, it'd be more harder to exist when you're out in the wilderness fleeing. And then the Sabbath day, the gates would be locked and closed, and you couldn't get out of the city. So pray it's not going to be on a Sabbath. And the besieging army would gather like eagles or vultures on a carcass. And that's what the Roman army did. They came and just devoured the city of Jerusalem, destroyed it, took the loot. In fact, I don't know whether you know this or not, but the great amount of valuable loot that they took at the time that Rome destroyed Jerusalem was later used by the Romans to build the Colosseum in Rome. And so the Colosseum was the direct result of the destruction of Jerusalem. The irony of it is that Christians were put to death in the arena. So you have these sort of things that interest you and yet recognize the tragedy of it all. And he said, the Son of Man is coming in the clouds. Now here's where people really get confused. They try to make this literal. And he said, the sun and the moon and the stars are not shining, the powers of heaven shaken. That's talking about the nations. The nations that are going to rise and the nations that are going to fall. And particularly Jerusalem was one of those. Go back to Isaiah 13 and 34, and you see that imagery where it talks about the stars falling and the sun not shining. Now, it's true that the sun did not shine for a period of time at the death of Christ. But he's talking here about the fact that when the Roman army came in, it was a fulfillment of the idea of nations falling. And then the Son of Man coming in judgment on the nation of Israel. Again, he came in a figurative judgment. Jesus did not come literally at that time. People are saying, particularly those who have the 70 AD doctrine confused, they say that Jesus literally came back at the end of Jerusalem. It was the end of time. It was judgment, resurrection, and all that sort of stuff that we understand is going to be at the end of the time. And so you have people trying to make this happen at Jerusalem. And so a whole doctrine has arisen about 70 AD and how everything came to a close. There's a number of scriptures there that you can read in addition to what we're studying and be able to recognize how this is a figurative language and not something that's absolute literally. And the angels are going to be sent to help the elect. If this time had not been shortened, it would have destroyed all of them, but some of them were going to escape. And again, it talks a little bit about the work of angels. As noted, Hebrews 1 and verse 14, the writer defines what an angel is. They're messengers sent forth to do service on behalf of those that shall inherit eternal life. And that's what they were doing. The Christians were aided to get out of Jerusalem, and there's some secular history about where they fled to, and they were saved from that destruction of Jerusalem. But again, the angels were involved in helping them during this period of time. And then he said, just look at nature. You can read the signs of nature. You know, for example, when a summer is near, when the tree puts forth its leaves. Well, we can do the same thing here in East Texas and North Texas. When the pecan trees put forth, that's the end of winter. You can't be sure until the pecan trees began to put forth. They're one of the last trees. But when the pecan trees began to put out their fruit, then you begin to know it's getting into summer. Well, Jesus used the illustration about a fig tree. And anybody today can have a fig tree and notice exactly what's happening. When the fig tree puts forth its leaves, it's late to do that, then you know summer is near. Now look at the signs, he's saying, because just like you can read the sign about the fig tree, you can read the sign about the destruction of Jerusalem. It's there for you to see. And that's what was so true about Psalms 22 when Jesus was crucified. When he cried out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He did not believe that God had forsaken him. He knew better than that. The fact was he was quoting Psalms 22 to his persecutors and Christians, the Jews that were jeering at him, saying, if you look at Psalms 22, you'll see what you are doing. And that's exactly what Psalms 22 talked about. So you're able to see these things when you understand the Bible. And here we are in Matthew 24, Matthew 25. It's been largely misunderstood, and yet here are Jesus saying how we're to understand the destruction of Jerusalem. And he said finally that this generation shall not pass away till all these things be accomplished. Now, if you go ahead and apply that statement to Matthew 25, then you really are confused, because there are many things that happen in Matthew 25 that cannot have happened at the destruction of Jerusalem. And so there are two things that are being mentioned by Jesus in Matthew 24, and people do not make that distinction. So I want to really look at the Matthew 24. If you'll turn there and notice verse 26, what he's been doing in the earlier verses is to give a warning that Jerusalem is going to be destroyed and the signs that would be there. And he talked about that verse 32 of Matthew 24. He talks about the parable of the fig tree. Then in verse 33, so you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near the door. That is, the abomination of desolation was just around the corner. And he talks about this generation will not pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So he's verifying what's going to happen. And then he changes. He says, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heavens, but my Father only. That's the key verse to see the change between the destruction of Jerusalem and the end of time that Matthew 25, the rest of 24, talks about. And if you don't take that, and it's an obvious contrast, here are the signs that you're going to have about the destruction of Jerusalem, and you can know when it's going to happen, but over here, something else taking place, the end of the world, and you're not going to know, because the angels don't even know that. And so, he said, like the days of Noah, verses 37 through 39, like the days of Noah, it's too late when the flood came. The flood came unexpectedly. They didn't know when it was coming, but when the flood came, it was too late. And that's what's going to happen toward the end of the world. Now, you know that that can't be about the destruction of Jerusalem, because he'd already given signs that was going to happen before the destruction of Jerusalem. And here he's saying there are not going to be any signs of that. Again, he says there'll be two men in the field. This is when the end of time occurs. Two women grinding at the wheel, one taken in judgment, one left to escape. One is a child of God and one is not. One is going to be taken and the other will escape. Watch for you know when the Lord will come. And verse 42. And that's an obvious contradiction of the previous verses down to verse 36 of the destruction of Jerusalem. They knew when that was going to happen because they could see the Roman army coming. Get out. Don't even go back to the house and get your cloak. Get out of the field and run and pray it's not in the winter and pray it's not on the Sabbath day because you'll be locked up in the city. And you don't know when that's going to happen. But be ready. And that's an admonition even today to us. Be ready like a watchful master of the house. And you're ready when these things take place. And that's what we're doing today. Just as surely as the destruction of Jerusalem took place at the word of Jesus, the end of time is going to take place just like the end of Jerusalem. And we're going to have to be watchful for that because I don't know when it's going to happen. We made the point before in Acts 17 when Paul was at Athens and spoke about the end of time. He said, God has appointed a day in which he's going to judge the world. And that day is already appointed and we're moving toward the judgment day. But there are not going to be any signs. In fact, it says you'll be buying and selling just like everybody always have. You'll be married and given in marriage. And all, the world's just going to be going on normally like it always has been until the day of judgment. There are not going to be any signs about this. And it's so obvious, it's hard for me to understand why people would try to say that that verse 36 is not a pivotal verse. And to say that this goes on into chapter 25 about the end of Jerusalem and not the end of the world. So we have here the parallel of Luke 17 and Matthew 24. As you look at this, number one, with regard to the destruction of Jerusalem, the Son of Man is coming in judgment as lightning. And Jesus did not show himself, but the wrath of Jesus was poured out upon the city of Jerusalem, Luke 17, Matthew 24. And then the generation that was hearing Jesus rejected him. They denied him as the Messiah, Luke 17 and Matthew 24. And then if you're on top of the house or in the field, Jesus gave directions about how to get out, that you'll escape from this destruction that's going to take place. But then where the body is, he says, eagles, and should be really vultures, are going to be gathered together. There's a carcass, and we've all seen the buzzards circling and that sort of thing. Well, that's what Rome was doing. They saw Jerusalem as prey. They were tired of the quarrelsome Jews. Now, the Romans didn't understand that God was using them. And many times that's true when God uses a nation. The people don't know that God is doing. But when you look, for example, back at Persia, when the people were in captivity in Babylon, when Persia took over and destroyed Babylon, then King Cyrus let the people go back to Jerusalem, rebuild the temple. He didn't know that God was using him. He just let the people go. And there were a number of nations that he let go like that to go back to the homeland that had been slaves and captives. And you see that God can raise up a nation or pull a nation down. And we need to remember that as far as America's concerned. You know, back during the Depression, the last one that we had here in this country among our days, people were saying that the banks are too big to fall and the great big corporations are too big to fall, like Ford Motor Company or General Motors and that sort of thing. And we found out nothing's too big to fall. And that's the way it is with a nation. We think America's got, we've only been here 200 years. You go back and look at the kingdom of Assyria and Babylon and Persia and how long they lasted. We're very young as a nation. But nevertheless, God has, I think, pulled us up for a reason. And if we go away from God, just like the Israelites, we'll be taken down. But then compared to that, we have the days of Noah, completely different from Jerusalem. You have the two men in the field in Matthew 24 as he talks about these with the destruction of Jerusalem. But in the people in the field, they're not going to have warning. And so someday you'll be at school or teaching or doing whatever it is that you do normally, cooking at home or mowing the grass, and that's the end. That's the way the Lord's coming back. The two women grinding at the mill, one is escaped, that is, she's taken, God accepts her, and the other one is taken. No, the one that escapes is the one that is sin. They're not going to be taken. The one that is taken is the child of God. And she escapes heaven, is what he's saying. And then, as you get to verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know the hour, and again, I mistyped some things, the hour your Lord is coming. So you have to recognize these distinct differences in Matthew 24 prior to verse 36 and then afterward that going into chapter 25. And that lets us understand some things that protects us. Number one, we know that the kingdom came in Acts 2. And that's what Daniel was talking about. And Daniel 2. Daniel 2, the Lord was going to set up this kingdom that would be without end. Well, reading the prophets from our standpoint is sort of easy. Many of the Jews should have been able to read Daniel 9 and understand that because of the events that are spoken of there, but suddenly they didn't. They were too concerned about their traditions. They were too concerned about their pride and wanting the praise of people. So they forsook the Bible and didn't understand what was happening. And the Christians, being warned, was able to get out of that and not be consumed in the destruction of Jerusalem. And so we have these things to understand. What really Matthew 24 and 25 is saying. Now, having said or misquoted Matthew 23, when you read Matthew 23, he's condemning the hypocrisy of the Pharisees and the scribes and the lawyers. And then he goes into chapter 24 about the destruction of Jerusalem. Matthew 23 tells you why in chapter 24 Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. Now look around you. And we see sinful people today, just like they were in the Jewish nation. We see people unconcerned. We see people working every day, going to school every day, doing their housework every day, just going through the normal routines of life. That's happening every day while we're here. And one day, nobody knows when it's going to be, one day it's going to come to an end. Now, I can understand and appreciate the destruction of Jerusalem because of chapter 23. But when I get over to chapter, latter part of chapter 24 and 25, and then it ends in chapter 25 by saying, some will go into outer darkness, eternal damnation, some to eternal life. And that's why we're here tonight, isn't it? We want to go to heaven and have eternal life. So it's really educational and understanding and enlightening when you understand Matthew 23, rather 24 and 25 and how it's broken up. You can understand what happened back then. You can understand what's going to happen before us. And so I just want to be ready. Just want to be ready. You pray and when you get up in the morning. You pray when you go to bed at night. If Jesus comes at midnight, you're ready. If Jesus comes at 10 o'clock in the morning, you're ready. I remember as a young kid, Brother Robert Turner was preaching in Ladewater, Texas, and somebody had asked him, if you knew that the judgment is coming tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, what would you do? You begin to think, what would anybody do if you knew at 10 o'clock tomorrow? He said, well, I just get up in the morning, shave, eat my breakfast, and do just like I usually do. Because that's what I've been doing, and no use to change now. If I'm not ready, I won't get ready before 10 o'clock in the morning. And that really hit me. Be ready. Be ready every day. Be ready every hour. And Jesus is coming again. And we know that. So I hope that helps you understand Matthew 24 and 25 and gives us hope for the future, because it's all in the hands of Jesus and He'll take care of us. If you're present tonight and not right with the Lord, you see what happened to the Jews. That's the anger of God. And I don't want God to be angry with me. I want Him to extend His grace and mercy and love and take me off with the angels to heaven. That's what my hope is. If you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ tonight in any way, please do as we stand together and as we sing.